man, everybody. How y'all doing? This is, of course, the host of the Lane 8 BMX podcast, Todd Wilson here. And I have a, I would say, a true idol. I would say a true, what would you call it? I forget the word. I would say legend in the sport of BMX.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Started out in
college. So I've been told.
Yeah. Well, that's all right.
I have quite the history. I have quite the history.
Yes, you do. Holly Dunn is with me today. Started out in Colorado, went to Arizona, family moved to Arizona, and then took off from there and just went bonkers.
Yeah.
So, Holly, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you? It's so nice to meet you, finally.
So nice to meet you, young lady. Yeah. I'm going to do it. I'm going to start at the beginning. 82, I would say, is your first year racing. Yeah, your brother Chad started, and then you actually thought it was just something boys do, and then got into it. What was the catalyst? Was it your brother that got you on the bike?
Yeah, so you know, I used to go to the track, support my brother. I was a gymnast, so that was my thing. I ran around the house in a leotard and a tutu, and he rode his bike. But I remember being out in the Colorado house. We lived in a cul-de-sac and there was this big rock in the front yard, and my brother and his friends would jump off the rock into the street. And so then I just kind of started hanging out with them and just kind of got my first bike and followed in my brother's footsteps. And here we are.
Not bad. Okay. So your first race was where? Was it in Fort Collins?
Yeah, so I think it was Boot Hill BMX or something like that out in Fort Collins. And you would talk to like George Goodall and Ramunde, how they grew up with Bobby Glay, Scott Hendrickson, Richard Fleming. So Chad and I did as well. We were all in that same group. Yeah, so I still talk to Scott Hendrickson, Jeff Murray. They were all part of the gang, I'm sure. And it's crazy. But George and Robert are a little bit older. So I don't want to say a lot older, sorry guys, but you know, sorry guys.
Understood.
But, so yeah, Richard Fleming was like, and which is weird because Robert traveled with Richard, but you know, I may have run into Robert in the past, but, so Bobby Glay, Scott Hendrickson, really close friends of the family. Jeff Murray, Bobby Glay is the reason I have like 12 piercings on this ear. Cause I remember as a kid, he had like 10 piercings all down his cartilage right here. And I always thought it was the coolest thing. So when I was 14, I went out and got all my ear pierced in honor of Bobby Glay. But yeah, so we grew up with those guys too. There's a black and white photo I think I sent you of Richard Fleming. And that's Scott Hendrickson doing that double jump over the first jump at Boot Hill BMX back in 81, 80, 82, something like that.
Wow.
So we grew up with the same people.
Not bad.
And then we
bad.
Moved out here. Yeah.
Okay. Tell me this. Before you guys moved out to Arizona, were you guys racing all around Colorado? Did you see George and them all the time?
Not all the time, because I think we were more south. They were in the Denver, Arvada area, and we were more Fort Collins, Loveland, Casper, Wyoming area. But, you know, ran into them here and there.
Not bad.
But I don't remember. Again, I was younger, so I don't really remember. But And I wasn't super into, like, I guess super into it. I was just a little kid. So, I mean, I was like nine or 10.
When did it really pick up and stick with you when you moved to Arizona?
Yeah. So we moved out here, you know, the first team we were on was Bike Barn, and that was super cool because we were actually traveling to nationals. So we were going to California. We went back to Mile High in Colorado. So we would hit three races on a Saturday, three races on a Sunday, local races.
Wow.
It just kind of was embedded. That was our life. Like, that's all we did. We raced BMX and we went to school and we trained and we had fun. But yeah, literally the weekend was we would take off early in the morning and get home late at night doing our homework in the car. And I fell in love. It was just fun beating the boys, you know.
Yeah.
There were no girls out here, so I had to race intermediate and novice and, you know.
Wow. Okay. So racing that much, I would think that you and your brother really started to get good quick.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
You know, I've got my resume that my mom has kept all this stuff throughout the years. I've got all of her little books and her notes and everything. And like, literally, yeah, it was like first and second place at every local race. You know, AZ number one, like district wise, yeah, I just, it just, you know, I just, I think maybe too, being in gymnastics, I became like a power, you know, like I had already the competition in me. I was already athletic. My dad like went to college to be a physical therapist. He was a wrestler, football player, and rode broncs back in the rodeo. So I think it was just kind of, my mom was a cheerleader in high school. So I think it just all kind of was embedded in me and my brother that we were already born athletes and competitors. So BMX just took off in the family and the people and the adventures and the stories and just the places we all got to see at a young age was like nothing else.
Okay. So there weren't a lot of girls that were racing at that time. So you had to race against the boys. Talk to me about that.
They didn't like it.
That's like too it. Bad.
You know, they didn't like it. You know, they were always behind me. So, you know, that was fun. But I don't know. I you know, not being. I used to beat them all the time and they knew it. And even to this day, I run into people out at Chandler, you know, and they're like, oh, my God, I remember racing you back in the day. And yeah, you kicked my ass. Like you beat me. Like, yeah, I remember chasing you around the track and you were fast. And so, yeah.
Not bad. Not bad. Okay. Did you guys start, did your family start doing the nationals right away? Or was there a point where you guys waited until you got to a certain degree of, I would say, skill and fitness? Or did you just guys go right away?
We kind of just jumped right into it. I went to the Grand Nationals back when I was living in Colorado. I think it was 1982 before we moved out here. We went to the Grands, me and my brother, and, you know, hitting the Mile High National. And then obviously moving out here to Arizona, the scene was so big that, you know, we hooked up with the Kelsos and, you know, Brian Phillips and his parents and Adelaide, like all these people. And that's what they, J.D. Finney, Tiffany Kellner, and, you know, Dean Reyna, those guys. And, you know, the Reyna family being out here Chandler locals. You know, I think our Chandler was kind of like the Orange Y of BMX, and it was always a competition between California, Arizona, because back then, you know, we had the J.D. Finneys, the Galen Starlins, the Tiffany Kellners, the, you know, Julie Nortes. Like, we had all these really fast riders, and when we got here, they were already pretty much into it, and we just kind of jumped on with them and just let it go.
Wow, you said a couple of names that I haven't heard since I was a kid. That's J.D. Finney. And Galen Starlin. I know who that person is. That's crazy.
Yeah. So I saw JD back. It's been a while, probably because I know he went into the services. He's done quite a few tours. I haven't seen, we had a reunion back in like 2009 or 2010 out at Chandler. And that was the last time I saw JD. I haven't seen Galen in like 30 years. I still talk to Tiffany, Kevin Adelot, Dave Baltus, Digger Kelso, Debbie Kelso. Like, I still pretty much talk to everybody from back then. So, but yeah, we had some good names out here in Chandler.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk to me about the racing back then in Arizona. Was there a lot of racing going on? Obviously, if you're hitting three races a day on a weekend, on a Saturday, good racing. And go from there. Was it like a caravan where everybody's just going from race to race to race?
Yeah. We all just kind of, we called it the BMX Mobile, and it was basically a wood-sided panel station wagon. And we'd pile into that. We had the license plate in the back, in the window, on the side window.
Yeah.
We would jump in that thing, and, you know, you would just pile as many people as you could, whether it were the Finney van, the Bike Harbor van, the Rain is pulling people around. They had their van. And we just all jumped in. We had Roadrunner. We had Jam, which is now like the University of Phoenix. We had Chandler. We've had Tucson, Prescott. I mean, we had a ton of tracks that we could just travel all over and race nonstop.
Wow. What was the first national that you hit? And did you race just girls at nationals?
Yeah, the Nationals, it was a girls scene. So like I said, the Grand Nationals in like 82, and it was girls. I don't really remember much of that. I don't know that I even really remember like my first national. I mean, it was probably Chandler. It was probably the Winter Nationals out at Chandler is what I'm thinking. Yeah. Those are my fondest memories. I remember racing all over California. We would go to the Mile High National every year in Colorado. We had the Nationals out here at like the fairgrounds in Phoenix. Scottsdale JC's had nationals. So that's pretty much, that's what I remember, is like going to California, staying in Arizona, and then the Mile High National.
Wow. Okay. So my question would be, going from racing the boys in Arizona to racing the girls at Nationals, were you killing them?
I mean, at that age, when I was, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12, I would say I was pretty up there with all of them. I mean, yeah. First, second, thirds, unless I crashed, which I did a lot. But first, I was a menace. But I would say I was up there pretty close with them. But I think racing the guys out here was definitely an advantage, because I did get a lot more competition racing the guys and practice and technique and stuff like that. So, yeah, for sure.
Not bad.
For
not
sure.
Bad.
But I held my own. I held my own, I think.
Not bad. Not bad. What came first for you? Is it power or skill?
Oh, God, no power. I have no skill. I have no skill. I am a power rider. So that used to be my big thing. My thighs, you know, and my butt, my glute muscles, I've always had really big, you know, powerful thighs. I love to pedal. So yeah. You give me one of those straightaways, like first straight, that last straight, like give me that last straightaway with the one jump. And then the finish line is this much further. Yeah. Like I would power right through the finish line. Like I'm definitely a power rider. I have no skill. Like the tracks nowadays, that rhythm section throws me for a loop every time.
Not bad. Not bad. Tell me this. When did you know that you were good?
We'll be right back.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we are the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
Probably around 15, 14 or 15. I think when I got on ESP, Eddie Sigman Products, like when I was 15 with Debbie and Dugan Fennell, I think that's kind of when that was my shine moment. That was, that's when I started to, we'd go on tour during the summers. I would hit obviously Nationals everywhere. They'd fly me everywhere. I think that's when I finally realized that I was kind of unstoppable and I needed to train harder to keep that up. But at the same time, like the experience and, you know, having Eddie Sigmund in my back pocket and having Brad Fennell and Dugan and Troy Jensen and Trey Walden and Marty Christman, like all those guys, James Pritchard, you know, John Malone, I had the right amount of support around me. And then back at home, literally after school, we were over at Dobson High School parking lot. Dad's tying a tire to the bike and we're doing sprints all up and down that parking lot. We're running bleachers. And I would do that till 9 o'clock at night, like every night of the week, if I wasn't on the track. And that was just, but I loved it, you know, but I think that was probably 14 or 15 is when I realized that I had something going.
Not bad. How did that come about to get on ESP? Did Eddie just, wow, what a name for BMX. Did he just approach you or how did it work? Did he approach your parents and say, you know what, I want to put, because I mean, you get on that team and all of a sudden you're all over the place.
Yeah. So my brother had kind of quit racing at that point.
Yeah.
So it was just me. But it was actually the Fennells. It was Dugan Fennell and Debbie Fennell that went to my parents. And you know, they got me on the team and, you know, we did the whole contracts and signed everything. And, my parents had to sign like waivers to send me on planes cause I was young and they didn't travel with me pretty much after that. They didn't go anywhere with me. I was on my own. So I'd say probably from 14 on, I was pretty much on my own. They'd drive me to the airport, drop me off and I'd be in charge. Debbie and Dugan Fennell were like my second family. Like, I lived out in Austin with them. We used to hang out down at S&K Bike Shop in Pflugerville, racing out at Capital City. So that was kind of like, so back in 2009, Mark Summers had hit me up about the Texas BMX Hall of Fame in Texas.
Yeah.
And they were trying to get me in, Eddie and Dugan and everybody were trying to get me in. But since I didn't have residency there and I didn't accrue points in Texas,
yeah.
I was still an AZ01 girl. They had to remove me from the ballot, which kind of stunk because I always figured, like, I always thought of Texas as home. And everybody always thought I was from Texas. And then hanging out with all those people, I had the accent and everything down. So, but yeah, like, yeah, I did. And everybody thought I was from Texas. It was so funny. But yeah, so Debbie and Dugan approached my parents and we signed contracts and they signed like medical releases. And my parents basically said, there you go. You got yourself a daughter. Have fun. Like, kick butt.
Wow. Okay. So tell me this. What did the factory sponsorship back then entail? So were you, how many nationals did you hit? What type of equipment were you guys riding? Did you get a lot of clothing and stuff like that, like leathers?
Yeah, so we got obviously all of our leathers and jerseys. I got t-shirts, I got sweatshirts. I still have my 20 inch. It's up in my bedroom.
Nice.
My ESP 20 inch is up in my room still. I have all my letters, all my contracts from Debbie and Dugan. So I had the 20 inch. They had not come out with a cruiser yet. So they actually sent me a CW cruiser, which I still have. And I hit every race I could, like whether they were flying me somewhere. I remember flying out to Maryland and meeting Trey Walden's dad, Charles. He picks me up at the airport in a limo and we drive. It was like 2 hours from the airport to the racetrack.
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember driving cross country Maryland with Trey's dad in the back of a limo to the next race. But yeah, so it was, I hit everything that they wanted me to. And I just worked as hard as I could and trained as hard as I could. I had a dietitian, a nutritionist, and a positive thinking coach. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
When I was in seventh, eighth, and ninth grade, I had a dietitian, a nutritionist, and a positive thinking coach to kind of guide me through everything on top of the training, you know, we did in the parking lots at the high schools. So it was pretty serious. Yeah. I was into it.
Okay. I got a couple of questions out of that I'm curious. Okay, now this is a period of time, I'm thinking, you're racing without your brother.
Yeah.
How did that go? I mean, it's one thing to travel with family and your brother that started all of this for you, but then all of a sudden, it's just you going and doing your own thing as a young lady. How did you process that? I'm curious.
I made a whole new set of brothers.
Wow, like, that's cool.
I made a whole new set of brothers. Like I've always looked at all the guys that I've raced with, Eddie and Bratley. Bratley, we call him Bratley for a reason, but you know, they were all my brothers, you know, all those guys growing up. I looked at it, you know, my brother went off and started doing his own thing. He's wrestling in high school, he's playing football, he's doing his thing. BMX wasn't, he was good at it, but it just didn't catch his passion like me.
Yeah.
So I literally just I got in a whole new set of brothers and they all took care of me and they all looked after me and they all taught me. And yeah, so it wasn't, I mean, it was hard, but like I said, Debbie and Dugan were family to me. They were tight with my parents. You know, they'd come into town and come over to mom and dad's house and have dinner. And, you know, we were all like BMX, just super close family.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Okay. From the time that you started, all the way to, I would say, man, 86, 87, 89, even to 89, you're racing a lot. Mm-hmm. Were you ever concerned about burnout?
No, I loved
it. And if you're not, how did you handle it? I'm curious.
So I was a cheerleader for 6 years. So junior high and high school. So in the mornings, I would go to cheerleading practice. Friday nights, I'm at the game cheerleading. We did competitions throughout the year as well. So I kind of had that outlet.
Yeah.
But I think BMX, it was just, it's just been such a passion for me that there really wasn't burnout back. Being a kid, you got all the energy in the world. I'm getting to travel all over the place. I'm getting to meet all these people. You know, I've got articles being written about me. I've got letters coming in from Gork. I mean, it was just such a high. But, you know, the cheerleading, I remember my senior year because I was always broken. So I come back from a national, my cheerleading coach would be like, really? Like, so my senior year, she approached me and she was like, you got a choice. Like, you got to pick BMX or cheerleading. I can't have, you're my strongest girl on the team. I can't have you coming back broken all the time. And so she gave me an ultimatum and I told her bye. I was like, later, I'll see you at the BMX track. Like, there was no question. It wasn't even a competition there. Like, So no burnout. It just, yeah. So when my cheerleading coach was like, we need you for a competition. We need you for this. We need you on point. I was like, no, I have a bike to ride.
Wow, that's pretty good. Okay. Yeah. 85, you won Race of Champions. You got first in Grands at that time. 86, you did really well. LA pre-race, Chandler pre-race first, Winter Nationals, double points there first. You went on a roll, like winning all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Never went to your head. You handled it pretty even keel.
Yeah. There was an article some kid wrote in to BMX Plus, or it might have been BMX Action or the paper. And he had said something about like, hey, I see Holly Dunn hanging out with all these factory riders and, you know, riders that are on free agent, and just, she only talked to riders that are factory and on, you know, like free agent. Like, if I get myself a free agent bike, will Holly Dunn talk to me? And Gork had forwarded me the letter, and I got to reply back, and I was like, it doesn't matter what you ride. It doesn't matter if you're novice, intermediate, or expert. Dude, just come up and say hi. Like, I don't know who you are if you don't say hi. But no, I was always kind of, Tiffany and Julie Lindsay. Those were my best friends. Tiffany and I grew up together, and we literally were running around the track, causing problems, being goofy,
being kids,
following the boys around, you know, like, no, not at all. I wasn't like that. I wanted to know everybody, and I supported everybody. And I was always at the sideline cheering everybody on. Tiffany and I both, like, we were, you know, we were Tweedledee and Tweedledum running around the track, just being goofy. So.
You got into the magazines at a young age.
Yeah.
You had pictures.
Chad and I did our first, we had our first magazine. We did a photo shoot with Hubert Woods, Tim Littlethorpe, Greg Abolowitz, and my brother and I. We did like a little fashion shoot with, you know, OP shorts or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's when we first moved out here in like 1982. So that was kind of cool. And I still talk to Hubert. Hubert lives right down the street from my parents. I see him once a year at the Winter Nationals. I text him all the time. And he actually built, when I first came back in like 15 or 16, he helped me kind of work on my bike. I went over to his house. I was like, help me with this. I don't know what I'm doing. So I still see Hubert all the time.
How long did you ride for ESP? And after that, who did you go to?
So ESP was just a couple years, I think 2 years. And then, I went over to Pedal Power. That was a short little stint. and even with Pedal Power, like, it was nothing like ESP. I think mostly Pedal Power was, we did nationals obviously, but ours was mostly summer tours. So we would take off during the summer, we'd go tour, and then we'd hit nationals along the way, Rockford, Illinois, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my short little stint with Pedal Power. And then I went on to True Color Titan with Tiffany.
Not bad. Was that an all girls team?
Yeah.
Okay. I got to add. Okay. So let me ask you this. What made you leave ESP?
You know what? I don't even really remember. It wasn't a falling out, because I still talk to Debbie and Dugan now. I still talk to Eddie all the time. I've never lost contact with them at all. So I don't even really know why I left, to be honest. I don't recall what that was. Whatever the reason was, it was stupid, because they were like, it was like the best team I was on, you know. Pedal Power was fun for the touring, but we did touring also in the dually with, you know, ESP. So I honestly, my mom could probably answer that, but I don't even know why I left or why, what happened. But
then you went to Pedal Power. How did that work? How did that come about?
So I think Lee Donovan, cause she was, her and Julie were my competitors. Lee and I were always at it, and she was on Pedal Power. And I think she went off to like soccer camp or something, or she maybe got burnt out, or she wanted to try. She was doing really good in soccer maybe.
Yeah.
So she kind of bailed on BMX for a little while, and Rob Lynch approached me and was like, hey, you know, Lee is going to go do this soccer thing or whatever she was doing. And do you want to ride for us? And then, going on tour with them. I remember grabbing the Pedal Power van at 16, 17 years old and driving it to LA by myself from Arizona to meet down there at the shop to, you know, and then Rich Bartlett would come pick me up and I'd tour with him for a little. We'd hook up with Pedal Power. I did a lot of tours with Rich Bartlett and with Pedal Power and with ESP. So I've hit a lot of the tracks here in the States back then doing stuff. Still friends with some of the people that I've met on tour. But yeah, so Pedal Power, but that was just a short little stint. Lee came back. We were on tour. We pulled up at Rockford, Illinois. Next thing I know, Rob had flown her in. And then after that, I left the team. I let Lee have her thing back. So yeah, left, and then I went and rode with Tiffany and Kellner and Reyna's and all my Chandler crew out here.
Not bad.
To finish out my career, I guess.
Not bad. Okay, tell me this. What's the farthest you've traveled to race? I'm curious because you've been all over the United States.
Maryland. I think that's probably the far, because that's like way up there.
Yeah.
You know, I've been all the way Oregon and Washington and California and
Rockford.
Rockford. Yeah. I've been out to Rockford, all the tracks in Texas, South Carolina, Delaware. Yeah. Like
Delaware just everywhere. Far. Okay.
Yeah.
What was your favorite track?
So Reno and Vegas were always bad to me. I crashed every time I raced in Reno and Vegas. They always scared me. So those were my nemesis. We stayed away from there. My favorite track, I mean, honest, like Chandler and Rockford. Like Chandler I liked because they had the bonsai.
Yeah.
And that was cool when Black Mountain had the bridge that they had. That was cool. Rockford, Illinois, I think is awesome. But then that was back then. When I rode the Worlds in 2017, South Carolina, that track is definitely,
yeah,
that one's fun. But back in the day, I want to say it was probably like Rockford, Chandler, my favorites. Yeah.
Rock Hill is such a beautiful facility.
God, it's gorgeous.
Yeah,
it's gorgeous. Really is.
It's beautiful, beautiful track.
Yes.
Okay, so you moved over to Titan. How did that come about? And the thing that really kind of blows my mind about it, which I think is cool, it was an all-girls team.
Yeah. So Tiffany Kellner, obviously, I mean, when we moved out here in 82, Tiffany and I became best friends. We were inseparable. We were sisters. We used to run up her phone bill. We used to run up her dad's credit card. Like Walter hated us, right? She was my best friend. The Reynas were family. Like Chandler was tight. Like Orange County was tight. Or Orange Y. So, you know, Tiffany and I raced separate classes. You know, we both kind of had our own little pathways. And then just, I think towards the end of it, you know, I was done with Pedal Power and her dad had started. So they had Titan, which her dad and all those guys ran. And then her dad just started True Color because True Color was actually color control. He had a color printing business to where he did all the color application to like the side of the U-Haul trucks, all those pictures you see and the Sears magazine catalogs and all that stuff. Like that's what her dad's company did. So he came up with color control. And then when they all kind of got in with Scott Furry and stuff over with True Color with Titan and Gene Roden and everybody, then like True Color Titan just came, her dad just came up with True Color Titan and just made a girls team, Mapawan and Aki and me and Nikki Nolte or Julie Nolte, Tiff, we had Heather Bruns. But I mean, I was just on there for like before I quit high school, you know, so it was just Tiffany.
Did y'all do a team sheet at all?
I think we did. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's really cool.
We did. Yeah. I don't know how we ever did. I mean, you know, it's kind of like when somebody asks about my bike, like, I've heard you talk about that too. Like, what are the specs on your bike? And do you tinker with your bike? It was like, somebody would just like, they just build my bike and they just work on it. And then they give it to you. It's kind of how team sheet was. It was like, hey, you're on team. Or half the time they didn't even tell us. Obviously we knew we were on team card.
Yeah.
Cause we were probably the only girl in that class. Cause Tiff and I raced a different class. So we all knew we were on the card, but we didn't really talk about it. Cause it was like a jinx, you know? So we just did our thing.
Okay, to be very honest with you, I'm blown away by this because I've never heard of an all-girls team before.
Yeah, it was fun.
I think that was really cool. I can't think of a team now that's an all-girls team.
Probably not. I don't think there's really ever been an all-girls team.
Oh, yeah. You guys were pioneers.
Yeah. Well, I think I sent you a picture. There's a picture of all of us. And that was our team right there.
That's why I was tripped out about it. Cause I was like, I looked at it. I was like, wait a minute. I got to ask you about this team. It's all girls. Yeah. That is very, yeah. very cool.
Yeah. And Walter Kellner and Ken Reyna put that together. So
really?
Yeah. Because they had color control. And then the whole Titan thing was almost, you know, it was like them, Gene Roden, like Caston, Lynn Caston, and then the whole Titan group. But then, you know, Walter had color control. Walter and Kenny had color control. And then they just came up with a true color Titan. And there we were.
Wow. Let me ask you this. I'm curious as to what made you walk away from BMX? What was that like, considering you were so into it? Was it just after high school that you just made the decision to move on? Or how did that work?
So after high school, I didn't really quit. I moved up to NorCal, moved up to Fair Oaks. I did race Roseville and stuff out there. I kind of went into the mountain biking. I tried doing that a little bit. My wrist, just from all of my brakes and everything I've had on my thumbs and my wrist back then, suspension on the mountain bikes wasn't really all there. So I tried doing some downhill mountain biking and I couldn't really tolerate it. It really, really hurt my wrist. So I actually picked up snowboarding and I got into snowboarding. So went up to Sacramento and Fair Oaks and kind of just picked up snowboarding and did that I still snowboard now, but I was up there for about a year and then came back to Arizona. And just kind of snowboarded, got into like kind of the band scene, started following music, local bands, a lot of rockabilly, punk bands all throughout Arizona. Met some dudes that were some rock climbers. So I actually got into rock climbing with them and we traveled Arizona and Colorado, did some rock climbing and bouldering for a couple years. That was fun. And then, yeah. So I don't know that, like, I didn't really like quit cause I was done with it. I just kind of found other things, you know, like everybody at that point, California, Colin Ann and those guys, like, you know, Carter tried to do the motocross, the motorcycle thing, Lopes and all those guys, Lee, were all getting into mountain bikes. And that's kind of what everybody just did. Like our whole era there got into mountain biking. So I was like, okay, cool. So that's what I tried to do. I couldn't really hang with it. So then I got into snowboarding and then later rock climbing.
Okay. I would think that the rock climbing would be tough on your wrist.
No, because it was, you know, it's pretty, it's like more forearm strength.
Oh, okay.
You know, so the mountain biking was, you know, more of that kind of punching, you know, that pressure or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
That weight bearing to where, no, the rock climbing was just more forearm strength and calf strength and stuff. So that was a blast. That was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Okay. Are you doing rock climbing without the, how would you say it?
The tellies?
Yes. Were you doing it without?
Well, like bouldering, we did without. Bouldering was just bouldering. You were just trying to climb under rocks and kind of like on these big, huge boulders. There were some mountains that I, like a lot of the time too, I didn't even wear shoes because I didn't like the way the shoes felt. I felt like I had better grip barefoot. So I would rock climb barefoot and all the guys would make fun of me, but I just felt like I had better grip than the shoes. I didn't really like the shoes. So I'd get out there and we obviously the bigger mountains, the taller mountains, we would definitely telly and you know, hook in and stuff.
Yeah.
But some of the smaller ones, I mean, no, we didn't really hook in or anything. We just kind of went for it.
Okay. What's the tallest mountain that you did some rock climbing on? And I'm going to ask you after that, your scariest moment.
So there's one just south of here, it's past Payson, past Superior. There was this, and I don't even know the name of it. There's this little dirt road. We used to go there all the time. And this thing was really, really tall. Like we would have to hook in probably 20 different times to hook in. And I want to say the scariest was I was coming down one time and, you know, you're belaying down it. And my foot kind of, I belayed down. And when I did, I hit a rock, but it was like an uneven rock. And so my foot kind of slipped and I hit my back of my leg. And that kind of scared you, got your heart pumping, got your adrenaline up a bit. So that kind of freaked me out. But then it was like, okay, well, that hurt. That sucked. And then just belayed the rest of the way down and got down the bottom. And was like, oh my God, that was so scary. So that was probably my scariest. Because when you're bouldering, you fall off a boulder, you just kind of knock the wind out of yourself, like depending on how far you fall. But that was kind of, even though I knew I was tethered in, my foot slipping and kind of banking my butt or the back of my leg on that wall, that rock, was kind of like, oh God.
you still do a little bit of mountain biking, don't you?
I do. Yeah. Well, I 22, I fell off a rock and I broke my arm. So I have a plate and 9 screws in my right arm. So I started picking up mountain biking with Brian Lopes, and then the doctor I used to work for, he mountain biked out at South Mountain. And so he kept telling me, come out. I've got a bike for you. Because I didn't own a bike either. Come out. I got a bike for you. So Brian would lend me bikes. And then eventually Dr. Wong was like, hey, you know, take this bike and I'll meet you guys out there, because he had an e-bike. And we would go out there and ride. We did some really fun rides. We went up to the helicopter pad, the helipad up there, which was a really nice ride. And then just one day, me and Brian, two of his buddies, and Dr. Wong were out at South Mountain. And I jumped up on this rock because I wanted to see the drop off. And when I jumped up on it and I went to hop off, my left foot stuck on the pedal and I went down into the gully. And I look up at Dr. Wong and Brian and I'm like, it's broke. And they're like, how do you know? And I'm like, trust me. So we co-banded, and then I had to ride out the rest of the way over to the pavilion to get back in the truck. So that cost me, I had a pin and a plate and 9 screws in my right arm now. So, yeah.
Do you feel it?
Yeah.
You can feel that plate in the.
Yeah. Certain movements I do.
Yeah.
You know, you can't feel it if you touch it, but there are certain movements that I, because the pins, and I don't have full range of motion because the pins are actually up in my wrist right here, that 4 of them are.
Yeah.
And so I don't have like the full, like to get it back all the way, but
so it stops.
It stops and it locks. Wow. So, but yeah, it was worth it.
Not bad. Tell me this, what is it about Arizona that you love living there? Because you moved back from the Sacramento area back to Arizona and you've been there. What is it about Arizona? Because, man, I've had a lot of people tell me they love Arizona.
I don't like it.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I don't like Arizona. I haven't liked Arizona since we moved here. And I tell my parents that all the time. They're very well aware of it. It's hot.
Why do you
and stay? It's all desert. It's not pretty. I stay because my parents are here.
Yeah.
And then when I had my girls, I've got their grandma and grandpa are here.
Yeah.
And I guess I stay like my girls don't like my oldest one wants to move somewhere rainy and cold and snowy. Like we want seasons. It's just hot and desert here. So I don't like Arizona, but I'm here because it's family and it's home.
Yeah.
So. Eventually, one day, I will have my tiny little beach shack on a beach somewhere, just a kitchen and a mattress, and I'm going to be happy. Like, that's my plan.
Not bad. That's a good plan.
That's my plan. It's all I need. Simplicity. And all my bikes. That's all I need. Well, my 2 bikes. That's all I need.
Not bad. So tell me this. When did Holly get back into racing BMX? What was the catalyst for that?
About 2020, the end of 2015, 16, start of 16, I had somebody send me a bike, tell me that they thought it would be cool if I got back on a bike. So I took that bike and started going out to Chandler, hit Black Mountain a few times, and that was the end. I was hooked again. I was hooked. I was ready to, you know, my daughters were still younger, but not super young, you know. They weren't in their teens or anything, but it was good enough that I could go out to the locals and, you know, maybe drive over to Vegas and hit the Vegas National and stuff like that. But
yeah,
end of 15, 16, got back into it, got back on the track, just playing around, just goofing around. I had jeans on and a Rich Bartlett block, you know, his bike shop block bikes out there in Lancaster. Yeah. I got 2 of his jerseys and I would just go out in my jeans and my Vans and a block jersey and just ride the track on an old Elf. And that's all it took.
Okay. So then I got a great question for you. From racing in the 80s to racing now, what would you say you've noticed that's the difference?
So back then, and again, just speaking like with me and Julie and, we had Christy Hacksaw Homa and Diana Bulling, they were NorCal, and then Lee Donovan. We raced pretty aggressive. And again, you know, no clips. So we're putting our feet out. We're sticking feet in spokes. We've got our elbows out. We're bumping bars. We're going into turns. We're riding you high. We're brake checking. I think we were more aggressive, and maybe being younger too, we like didn't really care, like falling down, getting hurt, getting some scrapes. For me anyway, getting some scrapes and scratches and bruises, I thought it was cool. I was like, yeah, check it out. I got some scrapes or whatever. Nowadays, the clips are obviously weird. It took me a good year or two to clip in.
Yeah.
That kind of, I'm not very, like I said, I'm not skilled. I'm not very talented that way. The women are good out there. They're definitely, I think we have a nice big class when you look at like 40 and over.
Yeah.
We do have a pretty decent class. It's cool to see the 50 and over. It's cool to see the 56 to 60 out there racing. I will say that I don't think they're not as aggressive. And I get that at our age, like nobody wants to be falling, even with the guys, you know, you got to get up and go to work on Monday morning. Yeah. I don't care. I walk in with a cast or a collarbone brace or whatever. I'm like, yeah, what'd you do this weekend? Oh, well, you know, I broke my arm. I broke this. I broke whatever. I don't care. Like, to me, it's fun. Like I'm not going to say I like getting hurt, but
yeah,
to me, it's just, it's always just been something I like thought was fun, I guess. I don't know. But, maybe the girls, they're just, and again, not as aggressive because we're older, but, I don't think that they really understand. Maybe if you just aren't from that era, they don't understand the way we did it back then. And it's not that we're being mean or aggressive, but on the track, we're competitors and we're competing, but we come across the finish line and we're friends again. Julie and I used to battle. That's how I lost the title at the Grands that year. We were battling. We both went down over a tabletop. And, you know, she went down, I went down, I lost the title, she lost the title. But at the end of the day, you know, we went out to dinner, went back to the hotel, had a couple beers, or, you know, whatever. Like, on the track, we're competitors and we're racing, and that's why we're all here. Yeah. But at the end of, even when I would race Tiffany, she was my best friend. If I had to go down or she had to come up, I mean, I wouldn't think twice about taking her out. I'm going to take you out. But then we're going to go back to your house. We're going to go get our nails done and go get some Dunkin' Donuts. Like, I mean... Yeah. You know, you understood that. I don't think the ladies, maybe now, not all of them, I don't think they really understand that. And if they do, I mean, good for them. Like I get on the track and I'm not trying to make enemies, you know, but I came back and it's just in my blood. I'm just competitive and I want to win. That's why I'm out there.
Yes, ma'am. You lost the title by 28 points, I believe, 28, 29 points.
A lot of it was rider count. And that was hard for me to swallow. The fact that, you know, I'm 15 and a 9-year-old wins. And it was hard for me because it was a rider count thing.
Yeah.
You know, obviously she's got more riders than I do. I won every national that entire year. I fall at one race, which happens to be the greatest race of all, the biggest race of the year.
Yeah.
I fall, but because she has more rider count. You know, and so, and then that was my thing. I was like, okay, well, put Nikki Marie in the gate with me and let's see who wins. Like, there's your chance, you know, like, so that was hard for me, but yeah, so that was just, it was one of those things. I think nerves got the best of me and Julie and I came out and we were just going for it. And we went down and I lost it. And there's a picture I sent you of me, Tiffany and Nikki Marie. And you can see the tears in my eyes. Yeah. Like, I think I cried for a week straight after that.
I can understand that though.
Yeah, that was hard for me because I won every race. I won every lap. I won everything for, you know, the whole 300 days of the year and one mistake. And I mean, but it happens. I mean, George Seaver did the same thing. I think he ended up crashing in his main and he lost. And Galen Starlin, I think that year he crashed and he, you know, so it's racing, right? It happens.
Yeah.
So
but you've
it's done, nice to have that title.
Yeah, but you've done really well coming back. When you came back, you've done quite well. Nag, what, two twice?
I
believe it is. And you've
won. Cruiser.
Yeah, yeah. And you've won, what, state championships, state titles,
Rock.
You've done that. Okay, so let me ask you this. As a woman, from a young girl to a woman with season, let me put it that way.
Thank you.
How does it, does winning feel different?
No. No, it's no, it doesn't. I still feel like a 15-year-old girl and winning to me, like ask Robert, like at the Winter Nationals, you know, of course I see that I'm racing 30 years old, like for the world's qualifier, you know, I don't have a class obviously. So it's like, oh, there's a 31-year-old and a 26-year-old and a 38-year-old and a 42-year-old. I look at Robert, I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, this is insane. And I go out and win. And I got off the finish line and like, he's standing there and I just start jumping up and down and I'm just like, oh my God, I can't believe I just did that. Like, holy cow. Like, to me, I'm still that 15-year-old kid. And when I race, I don't expect it. Like, I'm going to put in the work and I'm going to try. So when I do race, I almost kind of like, I don't have enough confidence or belief in myself. So when it does happen, I'm like, oh my God, did I just do that? Holy cow, that just happened. Like, that was so cool. So
does the body respond the same way as when you were younger? I wouldn't say 9, 10, but when you were younger as to now a woman who is in with season, does the body, does the body respond different?
My legs are jello. So when I quit racing in 18, cause I did quit in 18, the grands of 2018 was my last race.
Yep.
And like 19, I might've raced a couple here and there, but then I hung it up and I quit. And I haven't, like I said, I don't even own a bike. 3 bikes got stolen from my house. I don't even own a bike. So I'm not riding, but I still try to do, you know, I swim and try to go to the gym, or I do stuff here at the house and I stretch and walk my dogs and, you know, that kind of stuff. I take my beach cruiser with my dog around the neighborhood, but getting back on, I'm just going to say, since, you know, Robert challenged me to the Winter Nationals this year, having such short time on a borrowed bike to just kind of go out to the track a couple times and then actually going to the Winter Nationals and getting on Black Mountain on a new bike, mind you, because Robert just showed up and said, here you go. And then he's like, how's the gear? How are the handlebars? I'm like, I don't know, dude, I'm just going to ride it. Like, just, I don't know how that stuff works. I guarantee you, like, my legs were, my legs were jello. It's definitely, it does respond the same. You're still tired. You're still, you know, you're winded, but we've got to work on those quads a little bit.
but you did something I think that's pretty cool. You qualified for Worlds too.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. If you've not been racing on a BMX bike and you qualify for Worlds, that's pretty damn good.
It's like I said, it's in my blood. It's my passion. It's what I do. Like, I get out there and I'm going to give it 110%, whether I've on the track 3 nights a week or once a month or once every 6 months or on somebody else's bike, or I'm just going to go out there and just pedal.
So are you going to go to Worlds?
No,
you're not. Why not?
Because May this year is rough for me. I have one daughter turning 18, another daughter turning 21, and my 18-year-old graduates high school. So A, the funds aren't there, and B, I don't have a week or two to take away. You know, my girls come first, and they moved it to May because of the Olympics. If it would have been in July, then I would have gone. But May is just a really tough month for me this year.
Okay. Do you plan to continue racing? You do? Yeah, well.
Thank you, Robert.
Yes.
This is my motivation to keep. I mean, you know, for me, it's just like I'll go out of the track once in a while. Like, I was talking to Robert about this months ago. It was just a way for me to go to the track. I'd rather pay for the ABA membership or USA BMX membership than I would Lifetime Fitness. To me, riding my bike is my fitness and my exercise. I don't like to go to the gym. I don't like to go in there with a bunch of meatheads lifting weights. I can do that here at home. For me, BMX is my conditioning. It's my workout. I'm going to pay my gym membership, USA BMX. I'm going to go to Chandler, ride one night a week, one night a month. I'm going to do my best. But yeah, I definitely want to continue racing. I just raced the Gold Cup qualifier last weekend at Chandler.
Yeah.
It was a total points race. I wasn't planning on going. So I'm hanging out on Sunday and I'm like Saturday night. And I'm like, God, tomorrow's Chandler's race. It's 10 minutes from the house. I haven't been on the bike since the Winter Nationals, but it's 10 minutes from the house. What am I going to do? I'm going to sit on the couch. I'm going to watch the Food Network. I'm going to vacuum. I'm going to clean some mirrors. Like, I'm going to mop some floors, right? Why not go to the track and just ride? It's exercise. Get me out of the house and go ride. And I did. And I won.
Congrats. Okay.
Thank you.
Where do you see yourself in the next 5 to 10 years?
Getting my daughters through college. getting their career started, getting their lives on a path that they want to go. My oldest daughter graduates nursing school in December. So yeah, I know, right? I'm so proud of my girls. So basically supporting them to get their lives going, boyfriends, moving out, apartments, careers, whatever they want to do. I'm going to keep riding in between there. And then, like I've told like Robert, like, you know, once they're kind of situated and established and doing their thing, I plan on body willing, hitting more races. I mean, I want to travel more. So I'll jump in my car and head to, well, I can't go to Vegas anymore. They don't race there, but I'll head over to California. And I definitely want to keep racing. I may not, you know, be as competitive on, like, I'm going to a national every other weekend, but
yeah.
I'll ride my bike until I'm Miss Kitty's age.
I like that. I'm curious to ask you about the relationship you have with Robert Raymond.
That came out of nowhere. So when I came back racing, I always saw him around in his bright yellow Yes uniform and just getting to know everybody and meeting everybody. And then racing Chrissy Piper, which, you know, him and Chrissy were friends being out in California, Billy Griggs. And I know, you know, hanging out with Billy and stuff and meeting Robert. But I never really hung out with him. I also raced two of his Canadian, Shiloh Orchard, which is a friend of his out of Canada. And then, and I can't remember her name, and I'm so Harding, Lori Harding. She raced on Yes with him when I first came back. So, you know, I saw him around here and there, but we'd never really talked. And then I remember being in Vegas, the last race in Vegas. So last January, when I got talked into racing, Mary Keating and Melissa Bray just signed me up because I went out there just to say hi and goodbye Vegas.
Yeah.
Didn't bring my bike or anything. Wow. And they came up, why aren't you racing? Why aren't you racing? I was like, dude, I just came to say bye and just kind of hanging out. Well, they came back to me and found me in the bar and said, we signed you up. You're racing tomorrow.
Oh, shit.
And I'm like, dude, I don't have anything with me. I don't have a helmet. I don't have a bike. I didn't bring anything with me. And they're like, don't worry, we got you. Next thing I know, this guy comes up to me and he's like, hey, here's my number. I'll meet you here tomorrow morning at 9:00. I'll bring you a bike. And I'm like, okay, what's your name? And he's like, Lonnie. I'm like, Lonnie, what? He's like, literally. And I'm like, I know you. He's like, yeah, I know you do. And I was like, dude, you're Lonnie Learley. No way. So he hooked me up with a bike and I got in the gate wearing my dress pants from the night before, my boyfriend's t-shirt, Lonnie's helmet on his bike. And I raced Vegas and then I came across the finish line and there's Ramonde talking to Lonnie. You know, I'm hanging out talking to Lonnie and stuff. And Ramonde looks over at my boyfriend and he's like, do you have any idea who this is? He's like, you realize this is Holly fucking Dunn.
I love it.
and then like, I kind of didn't even really hear from him or talk to him after that. And then just out of the blue, like I said, he asked me if I was going to be racing. Like, I think he messaged me on Messenger or something. I was like, no. And then we started talking and that's when he sent me the picture of the frames and he's like, pick one. I'm building you a bike. I'll bring it out to the Winter Nationals.
That's nice.
And that kind of encouraged me to ride a little bit more. Cause I didn't want to go out there and disappoint him.
Yeah.
And then that's when we hung out at the Winter Nationals and I met a bunch of his friends. And from that point on, he was like, hey, I'm going to go tell Grindle that you're racing for Factory Taco Tuesday. And yeah, that's how I've only known him a really, really short time.
That's really cool.
Yeah. He's such a great guy. He really
Robert,
is.
I want some Taco Tuesday stickers.
Yeah.
I'm letting you know.
We need to get some hats made.
If he gets a hat made, I'm wearing it.
Yeah, I told him, I said, if we're going to do this, like we definitely need, because he came out with that big old sticker pack.
Yep.
And it was just random taco stickers. And the ladies at the I think Paris BMX, they went nuts. And then the kids went nuts. And then his granddaughter was going all over the place, putting them up at Black Mountain. So I told, and then I found these Taco Tuesday shirts on Amazon.
What?
And I didn't have anything to wear for the state race at Chandler last weekend.
Oh.
So I got on Amazon and found this. Now, these are just stickers I got from Hobby Lobby.
Yeah.
I stuck on there.
I did.
And then
it.
I sent him one because I was like, well, if I got one, he's got to have one. So I wore this out at the state race. And then, And then we have my uniform should be ready here in about a week. And that's, it's exciting. It's kind of incognito right now, but we're going with a Taco Rita theme.
Oh my Lord.
Yeah. So
I don't know what to say about y'all.
Yeah. So this will be a lot of fun. Yeah. We got Taco Tuesday across the butt. We got,
are you serious? Oh, that's going to be pretty cool.
It's a pretty cool uniform. Yeah. Yeah, I'll have to send you pictures when
I got to see it.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. So Cindy Party, which she races me, and she has her own clothing. She makes uniforms.
Okay.
She's out of California, and she's actually doing like the leathers and stuff for Team USA, or if you want leathers, she's making them. She's so cool. She's got like black and white checkered pants with like little rubber duckies on them. She makes Robert's Cholula outfit that he wears. And so she put together a custom uniform for me. So we've been working on it since the Winter Nationals, and she said it should be done in about a week.
Not bad.
Got the gloves.
Wow. Okay. So I want to touch on something a little more serious, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Jim Burgess.
Mm. Yeah. So when I left BMX, got into the band scene, was actually hanging out. So I met Jimmy back in like 80. God, I had to have been 17. I was touring with Rich Bartlett. Yeah. Rich would come out to Arizona from Lancaster, pick me up in his red blazer. We'd go out to Thrasherland because Rich also did freestyle. I met Jim out there. He was a freestyler, dude. I think he rode for Bear Cover back at the day. And then fast forward however many years later, 1998, so 10 years later probably, I am at Long Wong's, which is a local bar down on Mill Avenue by ASU. Yeah. And they're sitting at a table is like Jim Burgess and these other guys. The next day I go in there and I see a guy that was with him, and I walk up to him and I'm like, hey, last night you were here with a group of guys. Was one of them Jim Burgess? And he was like, yeah. And he was English. So he's like, yeah, I mean, this is my mate, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, can you give him my number? Like, I'm Holly. Like, we used to race back in the day, like blah, 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 blah. And he called me up. We started hanging out.
Yeah.
I went to like Havasu for a contest with him and his buddy, Jason Davies. We went to X Games. I went to Gravity Tour with him in Rhode Island. So BMX was back into my life now. Yeah. But I'm on a different level. I'm supporting Jim. I'm watching Jim. I'm meeting all these freestyles. I met Tony Hawk. I met Dave Mira, Kevin Robinson, like all those guys. We got married, two beautiful daughters. Jimmy had a fall in 2009. He also worked at UPS. So back in 2009, he was out at the skate park in Chandler off of Knox, right by Chandler Track. And he'd gone after work, hot and sweaty, decided to go ride with some kids. He had his full face helmet on that he always wore at the X Games and everything. And they were kind of making fun of him, but he also was like, later on, you know, was like, dude, it was hot. It was sweaty, like sweats dripping in my eyes. So he took his helmet off. Well, he took a flatland fall to concrete from about 18 feet in the air, split his head open. They had to air back him out over to county. And we almost lost him. Not to mention all the other concussions. Jimmy was a lot like me, was always falling on his head. He had quite a few concussions. Everybody that knew him in the sport knew that Jim was the guy that was probably going to go down. So we almost lost him. He had this big, huge scar, literally cracked his skull open. And he just wasn't really ever the same after that. He was a little off after that. And I think he hit a road of some pretty serious deep depression.
Yeah.
Kind of started drinking. I know Gary Laurent, John Parker, Joe Tekka, like everybody kind of tried to come to him and help him out. And then he lost his dad. 2 weeks later, he lost another good friend. And, you know, it was after that that we ended up losing Jim. So I think just, maybe you hear people talk about with the football industry and stuff and talking about CTE. And
yes, ma'am.
I think maybe, you know, it's definitely something you got to keep an eye on, you know, especially when you look at these guys that are doing these, you know, Matt Hoffman. I mean, look at that guy, bionic man, right?
Yeah.
It's definitely got to mess with their, you know, mental state and stuff like that. And then I think too with those guys and Jim's part, he kind of knew he couldn't really compete with the kids as he was getting older, and these kids were coming up newer. These 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds, 18-year-olds, and some of the tricks that they were pulling, it was kind of like, Jim, you're not like you can't, there's no way.
Yeah.
Like just you guys doing the flare or a double flare. I mean, that was tough enough. And now look at the stuff these guys are pulling. So I think a lot of it too, he bought a Formula One bike. He thought about maybe doing some Formula One, but at the point that was kind of out also, like that wasn't really a thing anymore.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was kind of rough. It was definitely one of those. He passed away right after Mira did. We lost Kevin Robinson at the same time, you know, that we lost Jimmy. So we lost three of the good guys all within, I think, a year or two of each other. But yeah, I think, you know, me witnessing a lot of the falls Jimmy had to his head and that last one in 2009, like, really scared us all. Like, it was a good one. So to touch a little bit about on CT, I do think it's important. I do think it's not something that we need to dismiss.
Yeah, you know, especially in BMX.
Oh my God. You see some of these falls, like
yep.
skateboarders, you know, and their helmets. I mean, their helmets aren't like the guys riding with the bikes. They're just like, you know, just little domes or whatever. But Hoffman, I don't know how he's doing it. That man's a machine.
Interesting.
He's a machine.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I agree. Yeah. So it was unfortunate. It was sad. You know, I miss him every day. I talk to him every day. I went and actually saw a psychic. To see if I could touch base with him. And it was legit. And you can't get on my Facebook because I'm private. Yep. So I know she didn't go on my Facebook and scope me out. And I don't know that there's stuff from Jim, but it's like way, way back. So it's not like there's anything on there she could have hit on. And she hit on some points that kind of freaked me out. But yeah, I miss him. Miss him a lot. I know the girls miss him, but you know, he lived his life. He traveled, he did his thing. He made, you know, from bear cover, I think he started, his dad did race cars when he was a little boy. So he grew up around race cars on the race car track. I call him my little white trash boy because, you know, he's from Tennessee. And you know, he was my little white trash boy. He grew up, you know, playing in the dirt, working on cars with his dad, his mom and dad. They were professional pool. They shot pool for a living. Wow. Yeah. So they were in the bars 24/7 and Jimmy was right there with him as a kid or working on cars with his dad out at the racetrack. And so he grew up as well in that industry. And then being out here in Maryville, out in Phoenix, Arizona, and got on bear cover trick team and worked his way up. So he made a name for himself as well. And he lived a full life. He lived a great life. It's just sad he's not here now to live this part of it. But, you know, we keep him posted. And I know he's up there and he's watching us. And, you know, he's still keeping track of us. And I always tell him when the girls go out at night, I'm like, all right, Jimmy, I've done my job. Now you watch them while they're out there because I can't watch them from here. That's up to you, bud. Like, so.
That's right.
Yeah. But I think just depression. I think he just had a lot going on with the fact that he couldn't really ride anymore. He couldn't keep up with the guys. We lost Jason Davies as well at the same time. Jason passed away right after Jimmy did. So we lost four of some really good, some vert riders that you have to wonder if some of those
CTE, you know, played a hand in it.
It had to have. I mean, those falls aren't nice.
No,
those falls aren't nice. We had a guy just crash out here, a novice guy at the state race, and you heard it. I was sitting there with Alec, one of my old teammates, in the bleachers, and we were watching the races, and you just heard this thud, and this novice kid came right up on the jump and literally smacked his head on that jump. And, you know, he ended up broken collarbone, punctured lung, broken ribs. They called 911. He was out. They were administering oxygen. So those kind of hits like that to the head that these riders are taking, you know, it is a serious thing in our sport and in all sports. You know, people talk about it a lot in football, but I think it's something too to discuss, you know, with racing.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, I want to say this, Holly Dunn. Thank you for coming on the Lane 8 BMX podcast. You were a blast to talk to. I'm glad I got to know you.
Same here. Very, very nice to meet you. This was such an honor. Thank you.
Thank you.